Welcome to the Dairy Farmers of Canada's research podcast series, Paths to On-Farm Excellence, where we discuss priority topics for Canadian dairy farmers. My name's Stephen Roach. I'm an epidemiologist with a passion for dairy cattle health and welfare. I did my master's and PhD trying to understand how farmers, their staff, and their advisors can work together as a team to improve. And I'm part of a team that's working with the Dairy Farmers of Canada to help showcase the latest in dairy research for Canadian dairy farmers, advisors, and their supply chain. You'll find this channel features a number of different series, from animal care to biosecurity to research summaries and beyond. This podcast series features conversations with farmers, veterinarians, nutritionists, hoof trimmers, and other farm advisors, researchers, and many other industry stakeholders. Our goal is really to provide farmers and their advisors with useful information that can be applied back home on the farm. If you like the content here, don't forget to subscribe to our feed and tell your friends. In this episode, we're joined by Larissa Martins and Caroline Pereira to discuss their work on Yoni's disease. Yoni's disease is a chronic, debilitating disease that affects the intestines of ruminants, including cattle. Anyone listening who is experienced with Yoni's knows that testing for it, especially in asymptomatic animals, presents a real challenge. One area of current research is trying to come up with alternatives of diagnostic tests and testing strategies to include calves more efficiently in Yoni's disease control programs. So, let's jump in. Well, Larissa, Carolina, it's really exciting to have the chance to sit down and chat with you today. It's a topic near and dear to my heart as someone that's done a lot of Yoni's disease research over the years, and really always looked to the group, Dr. Herman Barkema's group in Calgary over the years to see some of the exciting work you're doing, and really pleased to see that you're continuing on with some of this work and doing some really cool stuff as well. So thanks very much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's start with a little bit of introductions. Larissa, maybe you want to kick us off and just tell us a little bit about yourself personally, you know, how you got to the position you're in today, and then Caroline, we'll do the same with you.
Sure. So I am a veterinarian from Brazil. So I finished my vet school in 2019, and I came to Calgary to do an internship with Herman and his students. And then I just ended up staying and working with Yoni's. So now I'm more focused on the diagnostics part of Yoni's, and that's me.
Yeah, I'm Caroline, and I'm also a GVM from Brazil. I also graduated in January of 2019. When I graduated, I went to United States to work and do an internship there for a year, and then I got accepted here with Barkema, and I moved last year to start my master's, and my part of the project is more focused on interviewing farmers to understand their challenge to cull a positive animal or not, and also the interferon gamma assay that we are testing to be an indirect marker for a positive QPCR.
Very cool. So some really technical work that's critical, I think, to understanding the disease, the presence of the disease, those kinds of pieces, but also Caroline, that part about trying to understand decision making, which is so critical, as we know, in particular for Yoni's disease, but many diseases out there as well. So very cool. Let's start off with a little bit of the why behind some of this work. As I said, there's a longstanding history of Yoni's work out there worldwide, not just in Canada, but Canada has been a strong leader of work in this space in particular. So talk to us a little bit about why Yoni's disease. What is it that we specifically need to know about why this is so important and why we need to continue the work on this particular disease?
So Yoni's disease is a chronic disease in ruminant and not ruminant animals. And it's very important for the livestock industry because it causes economic losses due to the milk reduction production, and also slaughter value is also reduced. And it open for other infectious disease in the herd, and this can be very bad for the industry and the farmers.
When you think about Yoni's disease, what kind of impacts come most to mind? You mentioned a bunch of them there. You know, given that we've got high producing herds, we often have turnover that leads to not seeing a lot of clinical Yoni's disease. We tend to be worrying about that, you know, not the tip of the iceberg, but the subclinical pieces. There's so many, you know, unseen infections. Do we have a good sense for what kind of impacts we see as a result of that subclinical level of Yoni's infection?
So the main issue is that, as you said, the iceberg, we cannot see the subclinical cases. And the subclinical cases, you cannot see it, but they can still be associated to low production. The animals, they won't be as productive as they're supposed to be. They're usually your problem cows on a farm. So they're usually the cows that you're trying to get pregnant and she's not getting pregnant for whatever reason, and it might be Yoni's. And it's also animals that might have other types of infectious diseases, because Yoni's is a disease that is really associated to the immune system of the animal. So sometimes you have cows with mastitis, leukosis, and it might have Yoni's as well. So producers should be aware that controlling Yoni's is not only focused on Yoni's, but also improve the general herd health of the herd, because it is associated to other diseases as well.
For years, Canada had a Yoni's control program. It was implemented in certain specific provinces, but nationally we sort of had a framework, and then we don't seem to have that much anymore. And I know that's led some to think, well, you know, have we dealt with Yoni's to a point where maybe it's not as much of a concern? You're clearly, you know, investing time and effort into research to further our understanding. So presumably it's not the case. And I'm saying that a bit tongue in cheek, but you know, why is it still so important and relevant to us today in the dairy industry?
Well, as you said, we had, here in Alberta, I can say more specifically here, we had the Alberta Yoni's Disease Initiative, where we would go to the farms, we would take environmental samples from those farms, and we would do a risk assessment. So, and then we would go back to the farms with the environmental sample results and some management results to tell the producers where they should improve, where they're good. But there was no within herd work. So like they would improve management, but then they wouldn't test all the animals. So it was just a herd, like a farm level, but there was not within herd level evaluation. So some farms, we got really close to eradication, but then because it's like a voluntary program and producers, sometimes they are more interested in other infectious diseases than Yoni. Sometimes they have other main problems. So they were just not 100% interested in, and the program, they kind of slowly moved like towards the end, and also because of funding, because it's a voluntary program and the cost of testing as well. So it's not like available anymore, although some producers really got close to eradication at that point.
No, I think that's very fair. And you know, programs come and programs go, but diseases at the end of the day seem to be, well, they're pretty darn resilient unless we have a continued effort to address them. And something like Yoni's that is infectious in nature and chronic in nature and easily undetected in nature makes it, you know, a good candidate for spread, I suppose, but you know, within and between farms, which I know is what you've been working on. So let's look into that a little bit. What specifically has been the focus of your research within the Yoni's sort of topic in general?
So basically, in Yoni's, producers now, they're very aware of how to control Yoni's, because we had control programs all over Canada and most of the provinces. So they know that to control Yoni's, they need to have a very strong biosecurity measures. They need to control very well the maternity pen area with the cow-calf relationship, the colostrum management, the milk management. But so they know that very well. But the issue is we have some new research telling us that calves, they can also play a big role in the transmission. So calves, they are part of the control program right now. The control programs only on the management part, but they're not actively part on the testing part and the calling part. And our research group started everything in 2014 when we infected calves with the bacteria that causes MAP. And we found that calves early, at like a very early age, they can start shedding MAP. And then later on, we got some calves. We infected those calves with the bacteria and we put them together with negative calves. And they also shed MAP and they also infected other calves. So it's a transmission pathway that we need to control as well. So yonis control should be a combination of management calling and also testing strategies, not only for the older animals, but also for the young calves as well. We need to include those animals. So then we thought, well, maybe we got so close to the eradication part of yonis control programs on some of the farms, but maybe there's this transmission pathway that we're not controlling, which is the transmission of MAP between calves. So then the project comes in to develop a new eradication control program to include calves more actively in the testing strategy. But then we have a problem because yonis is a very chronic disease. So it takes a lot of time to detect. And usually you detect very good in the older animals. So we need to develop new diagnostic tests or improve the testing strategies of the tests we already have available to be able to detect yonis in calves more actively. So to have better, more sensitive diagnostic tests. So then the project comes in two fronts. One front is the eradication program, then including calves in testing strategy. And the second one is finding alternatives of diagnostic tests so we can improve the sensitivity of those tests to tests in calves as well.
So do you want to tell us a little bit more about some of the specific methods that you've taken on in terms of conducting the research, and then we can talk a little bit about what you found?
Yeah, so like we enrolled 8 dairy farms that were interested in eradicate yonis. So we start by testing on environmental samples. And if the farm was positive for MAP, we would move forward by testing individual animals. So we started with older animals every 6 months. And then because the project is focused on calves, we start testing calves every 2 months. So we did not use culture because it's very long time to like grow and everything, and we need to send the report for the farmer. So we took fecal samples by individual animals and pulled them together to perform a fecal qPCR that is faster and cheaper than culture. And also ELISA, because many of the control programs use ELISA, so we use ELISA. And also we included the interferon gamma assay, which have been tested in calves in trial before. So we want to see how that works to test calves that are naturally infected and see how these three tests will be efficient to test calves.
Why don't you tell us a little bit of what you found?
So the results are very like interesting, some of them. So first I will go through the results based on the diagnostic tests we have. So the first one, the ELISA. So initially, we kind of knew that ELISA wouldn't be good to test in calves. That was expected. So we did not get many positive calves on the farms that we enroll. And that's common. That was expected because of the chronic characteristics of the disease. So calves, in the beginning of their life, they would not have enough antibody titers to be able to be positive or negative for yonis. And then we also tested calves for the interferon gamma. So the interferon gamma is a test that Carol just mentioned. So we're using that to see if we can predict disease. It is kind of like a metabolic marker. So we're using that and we still don't have the results for those. We're still analyzing it. And the fecal qPCR, the results are pretty interesting, and it really differs between the farms. So some farms, we had very interesting results that the prevalence started at 2%, which was already pretty low. And then we would report those results to producer, and they would implement management and calling strategies. And then on the second visit, after 2 months, the prevalence would be already at 0%. I was like, wow, he or she did a good job, right? And then on the third visit, the prevalence would keep at low, like very low, 0%. And then on the second visit, on a different farm, a different reality, we had a prevalence that started at 5% and said, okay, there's some room for improvement here. Let's talk to the producer. And then the producer would choose only calling strategies. So sometimes you'd say, I don't have time to do more management strategies to improve this. I will just call the positive calves and that's it. Okay. And then on the second visit on those farms, the prevalence will be at 0%. I was like, cool, we're doing a good job here. But then on the third visit, after 2 months, we would go back and the prevalence would be up again to 5% again. So which means that the producer, he was just doing calling. So he was not doing management strategy. So we're probably having some transmission there that we couldn't measure properly, but it might be because he didn't implement any management strategies. And then for the other results, some producers, because Yonis has such an intermittent pattern. So sometimes the calves are shedding, sometimes they're not, especially because they are in the beginning of the disease disease development. So sometimes they're paused, sometimes not. And then we would report those results to the producers and they're like, I'm not going to call my animal because he was positive here. But then the second visit, he was negative. But what we need to be aware is that the animals, once they're positive, they're always going to be positive. There's no self-cure or there's no a treatment for it. So they're always going to be positive. What's going to differ is when they're going to be shedding and when they're not going to be shedding. But we had some issues there, like to tell producers that they should call, they should implement management strategies. So that's why Caro will start a new project trying to understand why it was hard for them to control Yonis. It's going to be more like a qualitative study to understand the drivers, like why they decide to call this animal and not that animal, how they would look at those results, how they interpreted that. And then the other study will be because some of our farms, they did not call the animals. So we don't know exactly if they would reduce the prevalence or not. But we have the results. So we're going to do a modeling, trying to see in the best scenario, if they would get rid of the positive calves, they would call the positive calves, if we would have a prevalence reduction.
Yeah, interesting. So there's so much to human behavior in all of this, not just a black and white test result or, you know, an imperfect information too, I suppose, too, right? To your point of shedding and whether we can detect it or not. And I mean, the one thing that jumped to mind from conversations I've had with farmers on this, and I wonder if that's what you heard with that producer or producers that were saying, well, you know, she was positive here, she's not here, I don't know if, you know, I don't want to call. Is there, you know, presumably there's some thought that there might have been a false positive result. Can you speak to that? Was that, you know, multiple tests over a period of time, presumably that helps to wash that thinking away?
Yeah, that very helps. Like if you do multiple tests, and that's kind of what we're trying to tell the producers, like, hey, we have 4 visits. This calf was positive on at least 3 of the visits. So it's probably positive, right? And we also recommend that a lot for ELISA. So not always rely on just one ELISA result. Always do at least 3-4 times just to make sure the animal's positive. So for the fecal qPCR, there's a low chance that when the animal is positive, it is probably positive. We've been improving a lot the sensitivity of the fecal qPCR, but it's not the same for the ELISA test and for the interferon gamma. So the interferon gamma, we're still trying to see if there's correlation with the interferon gamma results and the fecal qPCR results, if it really makes sense. So yeah, I'd say really rely on multiple testing, not just one. But still, sometimes we report 4 results. They're positive in 2-3. It's like, I'm not going to get rid of this calf.
I wanted to ask one other follow-up question, and then maybe we can chat about some of that qualitative work. Around, so you mentioned, you know, it's the classic conversation with Yonis control has been, do you do a test and call strategy? Is it just call? Is it test call plus management strategy? So we've talked about all that. When you mention management strategies, what specifically are some of the key ones that you're focused in on or that you're talking about in the context of the farms you worked with?
So the management strategies is mainly around the calves. Because they are the most susceptible animals to get positive, to become positive for MAP. So we really need to make sure we have all the milk management, colostrum management, and also cows. So if, let's say, we need to make sure the cows are negative, and if they're positive, let's say, oh, it's a positive cow, she's pregnant, I don't want to call this cow. So as soon as the calf, we have the calving, we have to separate them right away because there is a high risk of infection. So all that part around calving should be very carefully addressed. Also, all the points that we address on the risk assessment, all those points. So make sure you have a strict biosecurity because you can transfer the bacteria between farms. Let's say if you are a veterinarian and you go to multiple farms, making sure you have clean coveralls, clean boots, all the terms of biosecurity. If you are taking your animals for cattle shows, make sure you have a strict biosecurity there. Or also when you buy animals, my supervisor, he always says, if you buy animals, you might be buying disease. So make sure you buy from farms that you know they are negative. Do some tests before you actually bring the animal in. We have our Yonis control, or Yonis diagnostic test lab here. You can just bring sample to us. We can do it for you. And also all the other areas on farm. So make sure everything's clean. Don't mix the animals too much. Like keep older cows on a different pen, heifers on a different pen, calves separated. If you could test, that would be amazing. Especially your cows and your calves older than 7 months. So younger than 7 months, they don't shed a lot of MAP. So you might be just like spending a lot of money to test those calves. We would recommend to test older than 7 months to make sure they're all negative. And if they're positive, it would be nice if you could separate or call them as well. So it's all the biosecurity measures that are on the risk assessment that it can also be associated to other infectious diseases.
Yeah, I always like that argument about saying if you're not doing it for Yoni's disease, do some of these things to maintain optimal health and welfare of calves or adult cattle. I mean, these are feces in particular moves a lot of things, not just MAP bacteria, right? Yeah. So it's I think it's a good argument to say Yoni's or not. I mean, these are good effective practices, but it's a great comment too, just linking that back to what you were talking about in terms of testing gets us so far, culling gets us so far, but management is a clear box we need to check in order to really succeed at reducing, preventing and first off, and then controlling as well and reducing. So I think that's great. Caroline, do you want to talk at all about some of the qualitative work, what the thinking behind that is? I mean, Larissa's kind of nicely set it up in terms of some of the challenge we have around decision making. So what's your sense there? How do we address that piece?
Yeah, so we're going to do some semi-structured interviews with the farmers that would enroll in the program for this 1 year and try to understand their knowledge in calf MAP transmission and also like what is their driver to make a decision make what I'm going to call this animal or not, and how they prefer like to receive the reports and all that, so we can understand the challenge within the farm when it comes to improve management for John's disease. So we're trying like to start that maybe this year.
That's exciting. And it'll be interesting to hear about some of those results. You know, is the value of the calf worth playing or taking the risk? Is that the perspective? Is the perspective, like we had initially said, about maybe flaws in the testing scheme or more of a wait and see approach? I'm sure there are many other explanations that we don't yet have answers to.
Yeah, we observe that some producers are really worried about the testing. Like, oh, is the test not sensitive enough? Like, is it not specific enough? But for Yonis, really, we should be, because our prevalence in Canada, most of the farms, is relatively low here in Alberta. So we should be aware of sensitivity. We should be worried about, okay, my test should be as sensitive as possible to detect MAP. Because once the prevalence goes, if we are thinking about eradication, once the prevalence starts to go down, it gets harder and harder to detect the pathogen. And if you use a test that is not sensitive enough, you might not pick up all the positive animals that you're supposed to be picking up. So that's just to address a little bit.
I wanted to ask a question, a bit tongue in cheek, but you mentioned, Larissa, a couple of times you used the word that has always been an interesting word to use in the context of yonis, which is eradication.
Yeah.
What's your sense? Is it achievable?
I think so. It is possible. I've seen some farms here in Alberta that I went 2-3 times to take environmental samples. I was like, I want to take this farm to be part of my project, but it kept negative, negative, negative. But seeing how much work they put it in, it's incredible. You need to be very, very consistent on your management. So most of the farms that I go, that they achieve the eradication, they're very consistent in what they do. And they have all the reports, all the not only organized on the management part, that all producers in Alberta are aware of that, but also documented everything nice, all the reports that we need. And it is possible to achieve. I'm pretty sure of that. But as we said, it's a combination of management strategies, calling, and testing. You need to test a lot your animals. Right now, we have only, here in Alberta, we have only 2 labs that do yonis testing for feces. We also have Lactanet that does for the milk, but we still need to do a diagnostic test on the feces because that would give us a better idea of it's more sensitive for the testing and give us a better idea of the whole herd situation. So it is possible, but it's very intense and it takes a long time. For our project, we did 1 year of program. Some farms that were started the program with a very low prevalence, some of them achieved eradication, but some of them it's still 2%. It goes up to 5%, then drops again. So if you're only calling and not changing much of your management strategies, you see this up and down in prevalence all the time. But if you're really doing all the three parts I said, it should be possible.
Yeah, well, I think that's reassuring because I think for a long time there was a feeling that no, it wasn't really that easy. Well, it certainly isn't that easy, but it may not be possible. I think you're one thing. The research is showing on calf transmissions, identifying maybe a missing link to that question before, that thought before. Another is improvements in testing. And then, yeah, like you say, thinking about, Carolini, the work you're going to do in terms of talking about decision-making and reporting and how we talk about what we know and maybe what we don't know and try to make best decisions around that. And then collectively, your work talking about, what kind of management strategies can be effective and ultimately how we better understand what we can do and what has impact as we look at, a variety of practices and a variety of different situations and scenarios on farms, whether it's across Alberta, across Canada, or worldwide. So I think that's really exciting. A last question thought for me here is, where would you like to see or how would you like to see the work that you've done thus far and maybe are doing moving forward used? Does it inform and reinvigorate the development of control programs for yonis? Is this something we need our veterinarians out there to really take on and use the information you're coming up with to work with the herds that have really either been identified as being positive for yonis and or have a specific interest in trying to really put in that effort? Where do you see or how do you see these results sort of flowing out and to have impact?
I think it's more showing refocusing the producers' thought about yonis a little bit, because like I said in the beginning, they know how to control, they are aware of that, but it's not their first priority. They have major issues they're more concerned about it right now. So let's say mastitis, leucosis, digital dermatitis. But it's more refocusing it because some farms are very close to eradication. And the fact that we're not controlling yonis between calves, the transmission of yonis between calves, it might be one of the reasons why we didn't eradicate yet. So it's just more, okay, let's say I'm a veterinarian, I go to the farm, the producer is having issues with yonis, just try to refocus that. Hey, how are your calves? How is the management between your calves? How is everything going on there as well? Like, just refocus more, because we already tried to control so many diseases around the calves, like diarrhea, pneumonia, pink eye, all those things. So yonis will be just one more, and the management might not even change that much. So it's just make sure the producers are aware of that. That's my main message on this.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons, I guess, we are doing the interviews to understand what motivate them to make a change or to improve, because they know how to control and everything. But like, sometimes I feel that maybe they don't know too much about this part of calf management, or they think it will not change too much if they do something. So that's when we want to understand better how we can motivate them and help them to improve their management related to the calves.
What I'm also interested in is to see what are the drivers for their calling. Because like sometimes we went to farms for a leukosis project, for yonis project, and there were some positive cows. The cow is producing 60 liters and she's leukosis positive and she's fine. The producer, I'm not going to get rid of that cow. And then sometimes you have a calf. The calf on two visits was positive, two was negative. So, but it's positive all the time. And then the producer says, I'm not getting rid of this calf. So we want to also understand with those studies, those qualitative studies, what are their drivers for calling animals on farm? What are they interested in? I think that will help as well.
Yeah, so much of it comes down to priorities, right? And what your outcomes of success are, and whether those are in the moment, whether those are defined over a period of time. And certainly, like all of us, and you know, we're all human, they change, they evolve. And whether we think about them consciously and write them down and have a, you know, a mission, or whether they, you know, they're subconsciously there. And again, we are all creatures of habit, but also have different priorities, very different than what we as researchers may want to be priority on a given farm. And that's one of the other challenges, right? We're looking at one disease and thinking, like you said, you know, boy, I don't think you'll find a farmer out there that isn't motivated to improve or maintain the health and welfare of their calves. But there are no shortage of challenges in doing that, right?
That's true. And what I try to tell my producers, like when I started this project, we have a really focus, like, okay, this is an eradication. If the calf is positive, the producer should get rid of. Like, and then I kind of had to, I was learning as well. So I kind of had to refocus in the middle of the project. Then I started to tell the producers, hey, this positive result, it is just a little star that you put it there for the cow. And it is just one more reason why you're going to cool that animal. Sometimes if you have space for it, do it. But then, as I said, if it's a cow that is producing a lot of milk, it is pregnant, maybe you take actions later on after you get the calf, after the lactation is done. So it's just one more reason why that animal should leave the herd. But yeah, we really had to change over time the project and learn with the producers as well, and try to set up their expectations as well.
Yeah. And you know what? I mean, just a final thought for me is that's one of the benefits from working directly with producers, to get, you know, drive towards more practical, more applicable, more useful results at the end of the day. And realizing that while that might be best practice on paper or the best outcome that we think, you know, in a vacuum, we decide that's best for yonis disease. The reality is these are dynamic situations with many people, many animals, many other pathogens, and many other management practices we all need to factor in. And that's why I'm always in such awe of what producers do, because there are so many things to juggle in addition to what we feel should be priorities for them. So really, really excited to hear about some of the work you're taking and the approaches you're using to take to get that research done. And it sounds like some exciting questions to pursue from today moving forward. So with that, I want to thank you both for taking the time to chat with me, for your effort and for your research thus far, and really excited to stay engaged as you develop and answer some of the additional questions you have to pursue.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was great. I think the initiative you guys are doing is amazing, to share great information about infectious diseases to producers. I think that's going to really help them.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Farmers of Canada's research podcast series. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. For more information, please visit dairyfarmersofcanada.ca/en/dairy-research. This podcast was narrated by myself, Stephen Roach, edited and produced by Carly Wright. Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. The project is part of Dairy Research Cluster 3, a national research funding program made possible by Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada's Agri-Science Clusters program, the Dairy Farmers of Canada, Lactinet, and Novalay.